Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening.
Good evening.
How are you, Kat?
Good. Welcome to the Bard's Grove, everyone. I'm glad to be back after a bit of a hiatus.
That's right. We've been out in Never Never Land, and now we're back.
So gathering more stories, I guess.
Absolutely. We brought new tales and new adventures, ancient legends, and stories from a land that time forgot. So, Kat.
Yes.
What kind of adventures did you bring tonight?
Well, I wanted to let you tell a story first, because you know me, I want to talk about astrology a little.
Well, that's
fun. So why don't you tell a story, and then I'll talk a little bit about the astrology, and then I'd like to tell a story that goes along with our astrological energies.
I think that's a splendid idea, my dear. A splendid idea indeed. Well, my first story is an ancient tale from the land of the steppes. It's called Virginal, Queen of the Mountains. Tidings came unto Dietrich at Bern that Virginal, Queen of the Mountains, was in sore distress because a giant had wasted her land and had perforce to obtain as tribute at each new moon a fair maiden, whom he did devour. The prince set forth with old Hildebrand to give aid to the queen, who had great beauty, and ruled over those dwarfs and giants in the Tyrolese mountains that never sought to do injury unto mankind. Her oppressor was named Orkise, whose son was Johnny Bass, an evil magician. As the two heroes rode through the forest, there came unto them a dwarf whose name was Bibon. Bibon guided them toward Gerespunt, where the queen had her dwelling. But when night came, he vanished. Snow fell the next morning, and the knights were parted one from another. Ere long, Hildebrand heard bitter cries and beheld a fair maiden who had been taken to the forest so that the giant might obtain her for tribute. Fairest was she of the Queen Virginal's maidens. The knight proffered his protection and vowed to rescue her, whereat her heart was filled with gratitude and her eyes with joy tears. Soon the forest was shaken with dread clamor, for the giant was coming nigh with his dogs to possess himself of his prey. Hildebrand drew his sword. Not slow was he to enter the conflict, and ere long he slew the giant and put to flight his evil son, Johnny Bass. The maiden returned with glad heart unto the queen and gave tidings of how the giant Orkise had been slain. There was great rejoicing in the castle, and eagerly did Virginal and all her people await the coming of the heroes. Meanwhile, Dietrich fought with many of the giant's followers. The clamor of the battle resounded far and near, and when Hildebrand hastened to his old aid, the horde was overcome. Many were slain, and many more made their escape. Together did they then go upon their way toward the palace of Gerespunt. Darkness came on, and they rode to the gate of the castle of Orkise. deeming it theirs by right of conquest. But small hospitality were they shown. No sooner did they demand entrance than fierce giants issued forth against them. Heavy clubs they bore, and they smote fiercely. But soon they were overcome by the valorous heroes. Then appeared a black horseman. He spake in a strange tongue, and the giants sprang up out of the earth to continue the fight. And they were cut down. Others took their place. And when all the giants were slain, hissing snakes and nameless reptiles issued forth against Dietrich and Hildebrand, so that they had to fight constantly throughout the long night. The black horseman entered not the fray, and when dawn broke, he vanished from sight. Then did the heroes enter the castle and set at liberty three of Queen Virginal's maidens, whom they found in the dungeon there. Now, during the night, the heroes slew a fierce dragon. It carried in its jaws a brave knight whose name was Rentwin, and with him did Dietrich and Hildebrand journey toward his father's castle. There did they remain until their wounds were healed. Thereafter, the prince and his veteran companions set forth with Rentwin and his sire toward Gerespont. Eager was Dietrich to behold the fair maiden queen Virginal. He spurred his steed, he rode in front, and ere long he was lost to his fellow knights. 'Twas ill for him. Let's see. 'Twas ill for him that he waited not for them, because the way was strange and wild, and he wandered from the straight path, for it chanced that he came unto the castle of Duke Nitger, called Mutter. Now the duke had many giants, and when one of them issued forth, Dietrich asked of him to be guided unto the palace of Queen Virginal. Answer was given him according to his desire, but when he turned to ride away, the giant smote the hero with his club, so that he fell from his horse. Then the brave Dietrich seized and bound, and was thrown into the dark dungeon. The duke's sister treated him with kindness, but for her protection, the prince would have been put to death. When Hildebrand reached the palace of Virginal, he received tidings that the prince had been taken captive. So he hastened back unto Bern and rode forth with many brave knights. Among them were Wurfhart and Widiger and Hamme. They laid siege to Castle Mutter and fought against 12 giants. While the battle waged fiercely, Dietrich made escape and entered the fray. Victory was then within the heroes of Bern, and all the giants were slain. The knight sought to put Duke Nitger to death, but his sister pleaded for him, and his life was spared by the gallant Dietrich. Then did they all set forth toward Gerespont. On their way they beheld a dwarf riding toward them. Unto Dietrich spake the little man, and he told that fierce Janibas had surrounded the palace of Queen Virginal with a great army, and made demand of all the maidens, and the magic jewel in her crown, which gave her power to rule over all the maidens and all her subjects. So the heroes pressed onward. They climbed the mountain over ice and snow, and soon they heard the fierce clamor of battle, the howling of the great black dogs of Janibas was like the howling of wintry tempests. Strange monsters fought there, and the queen's defenders were in sore straits. The voices of the giants were loud as thunder peals. In the midst of the battle, Dietrich saw the black horseman. He knew him to be Janibas. An iron tablet he held in his hand and wrought spells upon it. The prince sprang upon him. His sword flashed fire. He broke in pieces the iron tablet and slew the dread worker of evil. Then pealed the loud thunder amidst the Tyrolean mountains. The glaciers were sundered. Avalanches fell upon the evil army of Janibas, which suddenly vanished from sight. Soon there was silence and peace, and an end to that dread conflict. Queen Virginal sat alone, high throned in her mountain palace. Unmoved and beautiful, brightly gleamed the jewel in her crown. A glistening silver veil was drawn round her body, and her maidens crouched trembling at her feet. When the battle was ended, Dietrich made approach, and she called him hero and greeted him with love. "No longer shall I reign here in Elfland," she spake. "The great deeds have I beheld, and for thy sake I shall leave my home and my kingdom, and henceforth live among men. For I shall be thy bride and love thee so long as life may last." Then were Dietrich and Queen Virginal wedded there with pomp and ceremony, and elves and heroes feasted within the mountain palace and drank wine and made merry. Ere long, Dietrich and his bride and the brave knights journeyed together to Bern, where they were received with acclamations by the people. Dietrich and Queen Virginal lived happily together, and when King Dimar died, the prince reigned in his place. Then was there peace within the kingdom, but evil was being wrought in another land, and it was fated that King Dietrich must again become a hero. But first, a fugitive, before he could triumph completely over his evil foeman. The story of Queen Virginal.
Well, thank you. Is that the Bern in Switzerland?
Yes, yes it is.
Great. I went there when we went to the Jung Institute.
That's right. You studied there, didn't you?
Yeah.
Switzerland.
So listen, what do you think about giants?
I sometimes take them metaphorically, and sometimes I get very scientific and think about people who've had good diets or are mutants and peasants who don't eat so well. So someone who's 6 or 6'8 or 6'11 looks mighty big.
Yeah. And I've heard that, you know, they've found skeletons of giants in different places. So, you know, often these fairy tales, they have remnants of really ancient stories in them. But psychologically, one of the things Carl Jung would say about giants is that they're overwhelming emotions. And so you might say mass psychology, and we can see that at work when people are overwhelmed, a whole group of people with a feeling. They're sort of like the nasty giants, aren't they?
Sure.
Yeah, you know, all emotion, big brawn, lots of strength, but really not really with it.
Well, you're going to give us some insight into the astrological world.
Yes.
Aren't you?
Well, the sun's been in Virgo since around the 21st of August. So we're halfway through Virgo. And we just had a new moon in Virgo last week. And so I like to think about, well, what's going on in the cosmic story now and what does it have to tell us? And then try to find a fairy tale to match. So I do have one. But to begin with, Virgo is very much about our work, how we work, how we are of service, but it's also how we integrate ourselves. And so it's about how can we name all the parts of ourselves that our belief systems, our family ties, the way we think, the values that we have. So Virgo is very much about belonging to yourself, coming into yourself. A lot of Virgos think they have to be perfect, which is a very bad misunderstanding because they drive themselves crazy. As I think, brother, I think that Lantern might know a little bit about that. Aren't you a Virgo, my dear?
Why, as a matter of fact, my dear astrology friends say that I'm a Virgo with Virgo rising.
Right.
Since I am a person who tries to do service, and since I'm a person who spends a lot of time working on messaging, I would say that, yes, I try my best to try to do a little good while I'm rattling around the planet.
Good. Good. And you see, the thing with Virgo is, of course, there's a whole spectrum of how you can act during it. And some people get very neurotic about it and just have to keep going and perfect. And they can write something, but it's not perfect enough. And they're constantly editing themselves. And you don't even have to be a Virgo to be like that. But if you have any kind of Virgo energy, your mind tends to run. And even though it's very analytical and it's a very analytical sign, it can go a little crazy if it's not held and focused. And it needs to turn into discernment, saying this is one thing and this is another. And so with that, part of the ability of discernment is to name something. And this is a fairy tale all about, if it was me, I'd say poor little Virgo overworking herself, trying to do something that's nearly impossible. And yet a part of her can do it, except this part is going to take her life away from her if she lets him. And so what she has to do is become very discerning and name who it is. And so this is the fairy tale, the Grimm's fairy tale of Rumpelstiltskin. And as I read it, think it in terms of that Virgo part of all of us that tends to promise maybe more than we can do and yet struggles and strives very hard to do it. And in that sense, sometimes we lose the good things in life, like our families and love. So anyway, once again, Rumpelstiltskin. Once upon a time, there was a miller who was poor, but he had a beautiful daughter. Now, it happened that he had to go and speak to the king, and in order to make himself appear more important than he was, he said to the king, "I have a daughter, you know, who can spin straw into gold." "Well," the king said to that miller, "that is an art which pleases me well. If your daughter is as clever as you say, bring her tomorrow to my palace, and I will put her to the test." And when the girl was brought to him, he took her into a room, which was quite full of straw, gave her a spinning wheel and a reel, and said, "Well, okay, now set to work. And if by tomorrow morning early you have not spun this straw into gold during the night, you will die." Thereupon, he himself locked up the room and left her in it all alone. So there sat the poor miller's daughter, and for the life of her, she couldn't tell what to do. She had no idea how to spin straw into gold, and so she grew more and more frightened until at last she began to weep. But all at once the door opened, and in came a little man and said, "Good evening, Mistress Miller. Why are you crying so?" "Alas," said the girl, "I have to spin straw into gold, and I don't know how to do it." "What will you give me," said the man, "if I do it for you?" Well, the girl thought and felt her neck and thought, "My necklace, I'll give you my necklace." Well, the little man took the necklace, seated himself in front of the wheel, and whirr, three turns, and the reel was full. And then he put another on, and whirr, three times round, and the second reel was full. And so it went on until the morning, when all the straw was spun and all the reels were full of gold. By daybreak, the king was already there, he was so eager. And when he saw the gold, he was astonished and delighted. But his heart became only more greedy. And so he had the miller's daughter taken into another room full of straw. But this room was much larger, and he commanded her to spin that also into gold in one night if she valued her life. Well, the girl knew not how to help herself, and she was crying when the door opened once again, and the little man appeared and said, "So, what will you give me if I spin this straw into gold for you tonight?" "Well, I'll give you the ring on my finger," answered the girl. And so the little man took the ring, again began to turn the wheel. Whirr, whirr, whirr. And by morning had spun all the straw into glittering gold. The king rejoiced beyond measure at the sight, but still he had not enough gold. And he had the miller's daughter taken into a still larger room full of straw, and then he said, "You must spin this too in the course of this night, but if you succeed, you shall be my wife." "Well, even if she is the miller's daughter," thought the king, "I could not find a richer wife in the whole wide world." Well, when the girl was alone, once again the mannequin came for the third time and said, "What will you give me if I spin the straw for you this time also?" "I have nothing left that I can give," answered the girl. "Then promise me, if you should become queen, to give me your first child." Oh, the miller's daughter was so afraid, but then she thought, "Who knows whether that will ever happen?" And not knowing how else to help herself in this strait, she promised the mannequin what he wanted. And for that, once more, he spun all the straw into gold. And so when the king came in the morning and found all that he had wished, he took her in marriage, and the pretty miller's daughter became a queen. A year after, she brought a beautiful child into the world, and she never even gave one little thought to that mannequin. But suddenly one day he came into her room and said, "Now give me what you promised." Well, the queen was horror-struck and offered the mannequin all the riches of the kingdom if he would just leave her the child. But that little man said, "No, something alive is dearer to me than all the treasures in the world." Well, the queen began to lament and cry so that the mannequin pitied her. "I will give you 3 days' time. If by that time you find out my name, then you shall keep your child." So the queen thought the whole night of all the names that she had ever heard, and she sent a messenger over the country to inquire far and wide for any other names that there might be. When the mannequin came the next day, she began, "Is your name Caspar, Melchior, Balthasar, David, Richard, Michael?" and said all the names she knew, one after the other. But at every one, the little man said, "That is not my name." On the second day, she made inquiries in the neighborhood as to the names of people there, and she repeated to the mannequin the most uncommon and curious, "Well, perhaps your name is Short Ribs. What about Sheepshanks, or Lace Leg, or Hare Lip?" But he always answered, "No, that is not my name." Well, on the third day, the messenger came back again and said, "I have not been able to find a single new name, but as I came to a high mountain at the end of the forest, where the fox and the hare bid each other good night, I saw there a little house, and before the house a fire was burning, and round about the fire a very quite ridiculous little man was jumping. He was hopping upon one leg, and he shouted, 'Today I bake, tomorrow I brew, next I'll have the young queen's child, ha! Glad I am that no one knew that Rumpelstiltskin am I styled.'" Well, you can imagine how glad the queen was when she heard that name. And when soon afterwards the little man came in and asked, "Now, Mistress Queen, what is my name?" At first she said, "Well, is your name Conrad?"
"No."
"Well, what about Harry? Is it Harry?"
"No."
"Well, what about George? George is a pretty good name. Is it George?"
"No."
"Now, my queen, Harry, give me the babe." And so the queen said, "I have one last name. Perhaps your name is Rumpelstiltskin." "The devil has told you that. The devil has told you that," cried the little man. And in his anger, he plunged his right foot so deep into the earth that his whole leg went in. And then in a rage, he pulled at his left leg so hard with both hands that he tore himself apart. And he troubled the queen no more. And so that greedy king and that beautiful queen lived happily ever after. And that is the story of Rumpelstiltskin.
Very nice. Very nice.
Thank you. So you can see it's sort of a Virgo theme. You know, in fairy tales, people, we don't often think about millers anymore. But back in the old days, I will say that, a miller was almost like a magician because he really didn't do the work. What he did was he had this wheel by a river and he set up the wheel and the water did the work for him, and people would come and they would grind their flour there. And so for many people, it felt like he could do magic. But, you know, and so here was this girl being taught, you know, here was this daughter of his, and he lied. He went, yeah, I can do magic. I can do magic. So can my daughter. So it's kind of hard when we try to do magic, when we try to please who we're working for, when we work too hard because we think that's our job, to be perfect. But in many ways, we can lose our life. And how many of us have done that? I know people who are working ridiculous hours and doing the job of five people because their corporation has fired most of the people and then without a pay raise given them, you know, five people's jobs. So, you know, here we are caught in this dilemma, you know, the same dilemma that the poor girl was caught in. What do we sell to get, you know, of ourselves? Do we, what do we sell to make it, you know, the king happy?
Well, you know, Kat, you've mentioned to me before that you're working on a story, on an essay that talks about how we can redefine the world to make it a better place. And I hope that you'll keep our audience informed of when that essay is ready to share.
Definitely. Definitely.
Well, you know, as you've pointed out to me many times, one of the roles of the storyteller is to help tell a new tale by framing, by explaining some of the dilemmas, some of the mysteries of the world. We can give people a new way of looking at it. And from that new way of looking at things, new ways, new paths are found.
Yes, most definitely.
Well, you know, I decided to try an experiment. I decided that I would find a story that is very like the one you just told, but also a variation. One of the things about jazz, about the classical music, is there are variations on a theme. And I've got an old story from ancient Czechoslovakia called Kimčak Martinko. Let me share that with you.
Okay, great.
Here we go. Kimčak Martinko. Once upon a time, there was a poor woman who had only a daughter named Helen. A very lazy girl. And this lazy girl refused to do a single thing. Her mother took her down to the banks of the stream and began to strike her fingers with a flat stone, just as you would beating linen to wash it. The girl cried a good deal. A prince, lord of the Red Castle, happened at that very moment to pass by, and he inquired as to the cause of such cruel treatment, for it horrified him that a mother should so ill use her child. "Why should I not punish her?" answered the woman. "The idle girl can do nothing but spin hemp into gold thread." "Really?" cried he. "Does she really know how to spin gold thread out of hemp? Well, if that be so, sell her to me." "Willingly. How much will you give for her?" "Half a measure of gold," the prince said. "Well, you can take her," said the mother. And she gave him her daughter as soon as the money was paid. The prince placed the girl behind him on the saddle, put spur to horse, and took her home. On reaching the Red Castle, the prince led Helen into a room filled from floor to ceiling with hemp. And having supplied her with distaff and a spinning wheel, he said, "When you have spun all this hemp into gold thread, I will make you my wife." And then out he went, locking the door after him. On finding herself a prisoner, the poor girl wept as if her heart would break. Suddenly, she saw a very odd-looking little man seated on the windowsill. He wore a red cap, and his boots were made of some strange sort of material. "Why do you weep so?" he asked. "I can't help it," she replied. "I am but a miserable slave. I have been ordered to spin all of this hemp into gold thread. But that's impossible. I can never do it, and I do not know what will become of me."
"I will do it for you in 3 days, on condition at the end of that time you guess my right name and tell me what the boots I'm wearing are now made of."
Without one moment reflecting as to what she would be able to guess, she consented. The uncanny little man burst out laughing, taking her distaff, set to work at once. All day, as the distaff moved, the hemp grew visibly less, while the skein of gold thread became larger and larger and larger. The little man spun all the time, and without stopping an instant, explained to Helen how to make thread of pure gold. As the night drew on, he tied up the skein, saying to the girl, "Well, do you know my name yet? Can you tell me what my boots are made of?" Helen replied that she could not, upon which he grinned and disappeared through the window. She then sat and looked at the sky and thought and thought and thought and lost herself in conjecturing as to what the little man's name might be. And in trying to guess what was the stuff his boots were made of, were they leather? Were they perhaps plated rushes? Maybe straw? Maybe cast iron? No, they didn't look like anything of that sort. And as to his name, that was a still more difficult problem to solve. "Well, what shall I call him?" she said to herself. "John? Henry? Who knows? Maybe it's Paul. Maybe Joseph." These thoughts so filled her mind that she forgot to eat her dinner. Her meditations were interrupted, though, by cries and groans from just outside, where she saw an old man with white hair sitting under the castle window.
"Miserable old man that I am," cried he. "I die of hunger and thirst, but no one pities my suffering."
Helen hastened to give him her dinner and told him to come the next day, as she promised to do. After again thinking for some time about what answer she should give the little old man with the red cap, she fell asleep high on the mountain of hemp. The little old man did not fail to make his appearance the first thing the next morning, and remained all day spinning the gold thread from the hemp. The work progressed before their eyes, and it was only when evening came that he repeated his questions. Not receiving a satisfactory answer, he vanished in a fit of mocking laughter. Helen sat down by the window to think, but think as she might, no answer to these puzzling questions appeared to her. While thus wondering, the hungry old man came by again, and she gave him her dinner. She was heartsick, and her eyes were full of tears, for she thought she would never guess the spinner's name, nor of what stuff his boots were made of, unless perhaps God would help her.
"Why are you so sad?" asked the old man when he'd eaten and drunk. "Tell me the cause of your grief, dear lady." For a long time she would not tell him, thinking it would be useless, but at last, yielding to his entreaties, she gave a full account of the conditions under which the gold thread was made, explaining that unless she could answer the little old man's question satisfactorily, she feared some great misfortune would befall her. The old man listened attentively, and then nodding his head, he said, "In coming through the forest today, I passed close to a large pile of burning wood, around which were placed 9 iron pots. A little man in a red cap was running round and jumping over them, singing these funny words, 'My dear, sweet friend, fair Helen at the red castle near, 2 days and 2 nights seeks my name to divine. She'll never find out, she'll never find out, on the 3rd night 'tis clear, my sweet friend, fair Helen, can't fail to be mine. Hurrah, for my name is Kinkat Matinko. Hurrah, for my boots are of doggy's skin. Hurrah!'" Now, that is exactly what you want to know, my dear girl. So don't forget, and you are saved. And with these words, the old man vanished. Helen was greatly astonished, but she took care to fix in her memory all that the good fellow had told her, and then went to sleep, feeling that she could face tomorrow without fear. And on the 3rd day, very early in the morning, the little old man appeared and set busily to work, for he knew that all the hemp must be spun before sunset, and that then he should be able to claim his rights. When evening came, all the hemp was gone, and the room shone with the brightness of gold thread. As soon as his work was done, the queer little old man with the red cap drew himself up with a great deal of assurance, and with his hands in his pockets, strutted up and down in front of Helen, ordering her to tell him his right name and to say of what stuff his boots were made, for he felt certain that she would not be able to tell him the right answer. "Your name is Kinkat Matinko, and your boots are made of dog skin," she replied, without the slightest hesitation. At these words, he spun around on the floor like a bobbin. He tore out his hair and beat his breast in rage, roaring so that the very walls trembled. "It is lucky for you that you guessed. If you had not, I should have torn you to pieces on this very spot." So saying, he rushed out of the window like a whirlwind. Helen felt deeply grateful toward the old man who had told her the answers, and hoped to be able to thank him in person, but he never appeared again. The Prince of the Red Castle was so pleased with her for having accomplished her task so punctually and perfectly, he married her as he had promised. Helen was truly thankful to have escaped the dangers that threatened her, and her happiness as a princess was greater than she dared hope. She had two such a good stock of gold thread that she never had the occasion to spin any more all her long life. There we go.
That's fantastic. Isn't it amazing how the stories travel?
Yep, yep. You know, I mean, we all have had the experience of that the telegraph experiment. So that as a story passes from hand to hand, and you can only imagine that in a pre-literate time when stories existed only in the minds of the storytellers, in the minds of the bards, I might add,
yes,
then those stories must surely evolve in time, don't you think?
Yeah. Yeah. And each generation, you know, each storyteller adds a little tiny bit to the mix. Most definitely.
So tell me, Pat, do you have another story for us?
Well, I do. It's another sort of Virgo story to keep on the theme.
Good.
This is about, you know, doing the work that you have to do and what happens when you do and what happens when you're lazy and you don't do the work you're supposed to do. So Virgos will love this. This is another Grimm's fairy tale called Mother Holle. There once was a widow who had 2 daughters. One was pretty and industrious, and the other was ugly and idle. But this widow was much fonder of the ugly, idle one because she was her own daughter, and the other, who was only a stepdaughter, was obliged to do all the work and to be the Cinderella of the house. Every day the poor girl had to sit by a well in the highway and spin until her fingers bled.
Now, it happened that one day the shuttle was marked with her blood, and so she dipped it in the well to wash the mark off. But it dropped out of her hand and fell to the bottom. Oh, she began to weep, and when she told her stepmother about the mishap, she was scolded, and the stepmother was so merciless as to say, "Since you've let the shuttle fall in, fetch it out again." Well, the girl went back to the well and didn't know what to do, and in the sorrow of her heart, she jumped into the well to get the shuttle. She lost her senses. But then she woke, and she came to herself, and she found that she was in a lovely meadow where the sun was shining and many thousands of flowers were growing. Across this meadow she went and at last came to a baker's oven full of bread. And as she passed, the bread cried out, "Oh, take me out, or I'll burn. I have been baked a long time." So she went up to it and took out all the loaves, one after the other, from the bread oven. After she went on, she came to a tree covered with apples. And these apples called out to her and said, "Oh, shake me, we apples are so ripe." And so she shook the tree till the apples fell like rain. And she went on shaking until they were all down. And when she had gathered them into a heap, she went on her way. At last she came to a little house out of which an old woman looked out. But she had such large teeth that the girl was frightened and was about to run away. But the old woman called out to her, "What are you afraid of, dear child? Stay with me, and if you will do all the work in the house properly, you will be the better for it. Only you must take care to make my bed well and to shake it thoroughly till the feathers fly, for then there is snow on the earth, for I am Mother Hole." As the old woman spoke so kindly to her, the girl took courage and agreed to enter her service. She attended to everything to the satisfaction of her mistress and always shook her bed so vigorously that the feathers flew about like snowflakes. So she had a pleasant life with her, never an angry word, and to eat she had boiled or roast meat every day. She stayed some time with Mother Hole before she became sad. At first, she didn't know what was the matter with her, but then found at length that it was homesickness. Although she had many thousand times better, she was better off here 1,000 times than at home, still she had a longing to be there. So at last she said to the old woman, "I have a longing for home, and however well off I am down here, I cannot stay any longer. I must go up again to my own people." And so Mother Hole said, "I am pleased that you long for your home again, and as you have served me truly, I myself will take you up again." Thereupon she took her by the hand and led her to a large door. The door was opened, and just as the maiden was standing beneath the doorway, a heavy shower of golden rain fell, and all the gold clung to her so that she was completely covered over in it. "You shall have that because you've been so industrious," said Mother Hole. And at the same time, she gave her back the shuttle that had fallen into the well. Thereupon, the door closed, and the maiden found herself up again on the earth, not far from her mother's house. And as she went into the yard, the cock was sitting on the well, and it cried, "Cock-a-doodle-doo, your golden girl's come back to you." So she went into her mother, and as she arrived, covered in gold, she was well received by both her mother and her sister. Well, the girl told them all that had happened to her, and as soon as the mother heard how she had come by so much wealth, she was very anxious to obtain the same good luck for the ugly, lazy daughter that she loved best. She had to seat herself by the well and spin, and in order to do that, she had to get her shuttle stained with blood, and then she had to stick her hand into a thorn bush and pricked her finger, because really and truly this lazy girl did not want to spin. Well, then she threw her shuttle into the well and jumped in after it. Well, she came like the other to the beautiful meadow and walked along the same path. When she got to the oven, the bread again cried, take me out, or I'll burn. I have baked too long." But the lazy thing answered, "As if I had any wish to make myself dirty." And on she went. Soon she came to the apple tree, which cried, "Oh, shake me, we apples are all ripe." But the lazy girl answered, "I like that. One of you might fall on my head. Forget it." and on she went. When she came to Mother Hole's house, she was not afraid, for she had already heard of her big teeth, and she hired herself to her immediately. Well, the first day, she forced herself to work diligently and obeyed Mother Hole when she told her to do anything, for she was thinking of all that gold that she would give her. But on the second day, she began to be lazy, and on the third day, still more so, and when she would not get up in the morning out of bed at all, Mother Hole looked at her. Neither did she make Mother Hole's bed as she ought, and didn't shake it so to make the feathers fly up. Well, after Mother Hole had observed her for a while, she soon tired of this and gave her notice to leave. The lazy girl was willing enough to go and thought, now the golden rain will come. Mother Hole led her also to the great door. But when she was standing beneath it, instead of the gold, a big kettle full of pitch was emptied onto her. That is the reward for your service, said Mother Hole, and shut the door. So the lazy girl went home, but she was quite covered with pitch, and the cock on the well, as soon as he saw her, cried out, Cock-a-doodle-doo, your dirty girl's come back to you. And the pitch clung fast to her and would not be got off for as long as she lived. And that's the story of Mother Hole.
Wow. That's
can't trick cool. Mother Nature.
That's for sure.
So, you know, these little stories, they're a lot of times we like to think, why should I bother with stories? Why should I bother with fairy tales? They can't tell me anything. But they can, and they do. And it's so important for all of us to realize that these stories are sort of markers. They teach us about life, you know? The Jungians, it's a prejudice we Jungians have, but Jungians really feel that fairy tales are the easiest way to understand archetypal energies. And, of course, archetypal energies are the things that make us human. They teach us how to be human. They teach us the different paths and the troubles we're going to run into, let's say. And this is, you know, this is a great Virgo story, don't you think? It's about, you know, what the that we have to do good work. That's especially important to Virgo. Mm-hmm. We do have to do good work, and we will be rewarded, but we also can't be lazy and think that we'll get rewarded for nothing.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So you did some traveling. Did you do some storytelling while you were traveling?
Just in my teaching, you know. I always tell stories while I'm teaching, and but no, I didn't. I didn't the way we are. And that's why I'm so happy that we are back here at the Bard's Grove. And if anyone has any stories they'd like to tell us, I don't know if anyone's listening right now, but if anyone has any special stories they'd like us to hear, you can always write us, right?
That's right.
And let us know. Hey, tell us a story about King Arthur. Tell us a romantic story. Tell us about magic. Whatever it is that you'd love to hear, we would love to tell you.
Well, you know, I came across this really interesting book, and I know it's one of your favorites. It's called Fairy Faith in Celtic Countries. And I wanted to read a little bit of it because I thought it speaks of a reality, it speaks of an energy that I think we don't keep in our hearts often enough.
Okay.
I'm going to read a little bit about what they call the shining beings and the opalescent beings.
Oh, great.
The shining beings. Can you describe the shining beings? Well, it's very difficult to give any intelligible description of them. The first time I saw them with great vividness, I was lying on a hillside alone in the west of Ireland in County Sligo. I had been listening to music in the air and to what seemed to be the sound of bells and was trying to understand these aerial clashings in which wind seemed to break upon wind in an ever-changing musical silvery sound
And then the space before me grew luminous, and I began to see one beautiful being after another. The opalescent beings. Can you describe one of these opalescent beings? Well, the first of these I saw, I remember very clearly. In the manner of its appearance, there was first a dazzle of light. And then I saw that this came from the heart of a tall figure with a body apparently shaped out of half-transparent or opalescent air. And throughout the body ran a radiant electrical fire to which the heart seemed the center. And around the head of this being and through its waving luminous hair, which was blown all about the body like living strands of gold, there appeared to be flaming wing-like auras. From the being itself, light seemed to stream outward in every direction. And the effect left on me after the vision was one of extraordinary lightness, joyousness, or ecstasy. At about this same period of my life, I saw many of these great beings, and I then thought that I had had visions of Angus, Manannan, Lugh, and other famous kings or princes among the Tuath de Danann. But since then, I have seen so many beings of similar character that I now would no longer attribute it to any one of them personal identity with particular beings of legend, though I believe they correspond in a general way to the Tuatha De Danann, or the ancient Irish gods. I was wondering, Kat.
Yeah?
Have you had experience with ethereal beings or beings of light?
Well, you know, I would have to say no, which is too bad because I would stand out. I would like to stand out in a meadow and ask them to come play with me. But I'm a Taurus. I'm kind of down to earth. So, no, I haven't. Although one midsummer's night in Switzerland, my husband and I were walking in the woods, and this beautiful green glowing something was down in the road, down on the path. It wasn't a road. It was a path in the forest. But we never could figure out what it was. So I always thought that perhaps that was the fairy folk. But otherwise, no, I haven't. And I've been quite disappointed that I haven't. Have you?
Yes, I've had a very, very similar experience twice. Once when I was up in the mountains of Virginia, I had gone with some friends to attend a political event, which unfortunately I found very disappointing, because although people came with a good intention, the leadership took the adventure in a very, very unfortunate direction. So my friends and I decided that we would seek truth in nature, and we fled the city to the mountains, and there we decided to meditate and reconnect to the deepest center. And while we were there, we began to hear the music of the wind. And we were both musicians, my friend Ray and I. And I would say, "Do you hear this note?" And he would say, "Yes, I hear that." And then he would say, "I hear a B or a D chord." And moment after moment after moment, we could hear this music. We were hearing the same music. And that was it felt like a blessing. Another time, I had done some traveling, and my wife and I came back to Miami, and most of our friends who were officially on the path, people who were actively seeking spiritual truth, had left town. So we had what you might call earthbound friends at that point. And I felt it was so important that we reconnected with the spiritual part of the community. I decided I would do a walkabout or a dream quest. I would go out into the glades and then find a spirit guide there, and that spirit would reconnect me to the spiritual folk in this area. Well, sure enough, I decided to walk out, and I began to hitchhike, and every person I met on this path, every one of them needed to talk about spirit.
And when I got off in the middle of the glades, I was prepared to wait days. I was prepared to meditate in silence for days and days until I had my vision. And no sooner did I walk out into the glades and sit down and start my meditation than I saw a luminous being. And I had that same sense of uplift, of exhilaration, of just an incredible energy field. And then as I came back into the city, I kind of was chided by this spirit. He said, you thought you had to do all this? You had to come out here? You had to wait a long time? I'm right here. This is not far away. And we both smiled, and he evaporated in light. And with a very, very light heart, I walked back to the road to hitchhike back to town. And every new ride was another group of spiritual people. And then I ended up riding back into town with a group of yogis who are on their way to a sunrise meditation. So it was a really wonderful experience.
That's magical. That most definitely is magical.
Well, Kat, I have to say it's been such a pleasure to come back together with you and share some stories.
Yes. So next week, we'll be back same time, same place. And also, because we're on a new network, new Mercury Media, there's many different shows during the week. And Lantern, you do a show on Sunday, don't you?
That's right, Kat.
Why don't you invite everybody?
Well, Sunday evening, 7 o'clock Eastern Time, we do a show about activists. And the idea here is, you know, so many of us who try to contribute productively into the spirit of the times find progressive ideas locked out of the mainstream. We're not included in mainstream discussions. Our ideas are not involved in the corporate communications. So what I wanted to do was to invite progressives to share their insight, to share the work that they're doing, to speak about how they began to do the work. Because it seems interesting to me that when people make that transition from being merely an observer in their society to an activist, to someone who wants to take an active part, who wants to work with others and build a better society, those people are so important. Those are precious gems, and those are stories, and those are messages that we need to hear. You know, so many of us progressives are news junkies. We want to hear the news. We want to know what's going on. And unfortunately, if you're only limited to corporate media, you're going to be depressed. It's going to be a sad story. So here, when we invite progressives to tell positive stories about the work that they're doing, people tell me that they feel so good to know that there are good people out there doing good work every day, and it's true. This Sunday at 7 o'clock Eastern Time, we have a group of people talking about how they're working to make this a better environment. Yeah, they're talking about the challenges, but they're also talking about the work that they do to help make this a better world. And that, my friends, that is enlightening. Thank you so much, Kat.
And thank you. Thank you. And I urge everyone to tune in. When do you do it?
It's 7 o'clock Eastern Time. And even though if you can't tune in live, like you can tune in live here at 8 o'clock Eastern Time for this show, you can listen to the shows anytime. They're recorded. You can tune in anytime. So thank you, Kat.
And thank you, Lantern, you know, because it's so important for us to tell all the stories. And while I love the ancient stories, it's just as important to tell the stories that are happening right now.
Absolutely. I'm going to have a fresh one next week.
Okay. So everyone take care. Have a great week. And we'll see you back at the Bard's Grove. Merry meet.
Merry
part.
And merry meet again. Thank you, Kat.
Thank you, Lantern. Have a good week.
Okay. Good night, folks. Talk to you soon. See you next week. Thank you.
Bard's Grove, ancient and timeless stories. Legends for now. Bye-bye.